I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation. Indiana is one of only a handful of states not to have a hate crimes law. We'll talk about the why of that and some plans to change it. My guests are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor, a Democrat from Indianapolis, David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council, and Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today on No Limits about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor. He's a Democrat from Indianapolis. David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council. And Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Great to be here.
It's good to have all of you here. Before we get into the discussion, I should say that we invited representatives from organizations or groups that have expressed, at least historically, reservations about hate crimes legislation. They either had other commitments or, in most cases, did not even respond to the invitation. So I want to get that out there, that if there is a side that's not represented, it wasn't from lack of effort on our part. So let's start by talking about what I said in the billboard set up to the program. The fact that Indiana is one of only a handful of states in Indiana not to have hate crimes legislation. Ask a relatively simple question that I suspect does not have a particularly simple answer. Why is that? I'll start with Senator Taylor, but I'm going to take it around the horn.
Well, I think that Indiana sometimes is behind the rest of the country when it comes to making what we call progressive laws like this. And unfortunately, we haven't seen any movement over the last 10 years, 15 years on this piece of legislation. Although I've been submitting this legislation for at least 6 of those years right now. So I think that Indiana just finds itself typically behind the rest of the country when it comes to this type of legislation.
Brandon.
There was a wave of these laws around the country. I want to say that it was in the 1990s, around sort of national issues that had popped up around hate crimes, particularly I think about the Matthew Shepard incident in Wyoming, although it's important to note that Wyoming is one of those 5 states that doesn't have a hate crimes law. But Indiana didn't join, though. I wasn't around then. I was, to be fair, in grade school. So I wasn't around in the 1990s when
you
Indiana
had to say that.
Yeah,
I
just thought I'd just slip that in there.
Okay.
Indiana obviously didn't join those ranks in that wave. And you often see these things with all sorts of laws, is a bunch of states pass a certain kind of law at the same time for roughly the same reason, because it becomes national news. Indiana, obviously, for whatever reason, and I don't know why, wasn't one of those states back then. And in the intervening years, for reasons that Senator Taylor just talked about a little bit, it has decided for one reason or another not to join those ranks. But I will say this, being perhaps the person who's going to present some of the arguments from the other side today, there is some disagreement over whether Indiana has a hate crimes law. Now, if you say Indiana does not have an explicit hate crimes law, everyone will agree to that. But there is a provision in Indiana law that some folks say can be used to punish hate crimes.
David.
Well, I think there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about what a hate crime statute can do. And I think that's obviously played into the discussions that we've had here in the state over the last couple of years. You know, like Senator Taylor said, this has been a long time discussion in Indiana. For whatever reasons, it cooled for quite a while. And outside organizations have really had the pleasure of working with Senator Taylor and other legislative leaders across both sides of the aisle to reinvigorate the conversation here. And, you know, while I don't know for sure, I would suspect that each state that enacted these laws in the past went through a certain period of education and probably took a couple of years to get those laws passed in those states. And so I think we are having that same growing and education process here in Indiana, and we're just at the point now that most states were at about 15 years ago.
So, David, I'll stay with you, but then I'm going to go to Senator Taylor after that. We probably ought to talk about at least the kinds of bills that have been presented that haven't made their way through. What do they say? What changes in law would they affect?
Sure. So what we're talking about is legislation that takes specifically into account a bias or hate motivation behind a crime. A crime is committed specifically because a victim was targeted for a certain characteristic, something like race or religion or their national origin. What advocates for this legislation have been asking for the last couple of years is a piece of legislation that sort of contains three things. One is some sort of enhancement or enhanced sentencing structure that allows judges or prosecutors to ask for some extra time to take into account these motivations behind these crimes. The second piece is an update to our already existing reporting requirements, so asking local law enforcement agencies to do a better job of reporting when these types of crimes happen, both to the state police and to the FBI. And the final piece is about law enforcement education, asking our law enforcement officials to receive a little bit more education on how to recognize, respond, and react to these types of crimes when they happen.
So of those three provisions, Senator Taylor, in your long effort to get this through, where do the objections come from?
Well,
I can't imagine the reporting mechanism would be that much, would it?
Actually, it would. The law currently on the books requires law enforcement agencies twice a year to report any potential or known bias crimes that are reported or investigated in the communities. And we currently have approximately 12 to 14 of the over 300 that actually do it. And those communities are represented mostly in the urban areas in the state. And you'd be surprised at the reluctance for people to actually want to penalize law enforcement for not reporting, although they already report on a daily basis other things. So all it would be technically is a click of a button and reporting these things. But the other piece in regards to educating law enforcement who go through over 2 weeks of training at the academy, they have approximately 4 hours of bias crimes training. And I don't think that that's significant at all, especially when you see the types of activities that are going on, not only in the state of Indiana, but across the country. So I think the training is insignificant when it comes to the overall training that these officers receive while they're in the academy.
Brandon.
Something to add on to what Senator Taylor said, because I think it's important to emphasize it. There is a provision in Indiana law that says every law enforcement agency in the state will report to the state police and the FBI mm-hmm. about hate crimes. And a very, very, very small number report. And that doesn't mean a very small number say, yes, we had hate crimes. Some of those reports say we didn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
They report zero, and that's what you want. Most don't say anything at all one way or the other.
So you have no information about whether they're being tracked or not.
No.
Except for a handful of communities across
right.
the state.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation here in Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So let's talk about this then, because it is, and I probably at this point ought to do my standard disclosure, and say, I actually was one of the people at one time who was expressing reservations about hate crimes legislation when I was the executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union. So some of the arguments I am familiar with and know at least what the concerns were. Because we don't have anyone on the program right now who's really expressing, I'm going to play the role of devil's advocate here and toss the arguments out. The first one you hear most often is that, and I would say this is not one that I necessarily advanced at the time, but the one that you hear most often is that this is thought policing here, that you're trying to penalize people for thinking what they think. David, you're the one who's making eye contact, so I'm going to let you respond to that first.
Sure. There are a number of myths and, you know, again, myths and misconceptions about what a hate crime statute, how it would be utilized. And this is certainly at the top of our list. This idea that we're somehow cooling free speech or legislating thought process. And you know, obviously we'd argue that's obviously not the case. What we're talking about here is addressing the action and the action of the crime. we are, you know, you are, as an individual, are free to think anything you want. You are free to have any kind of biased thought. You're even free to say those things. I mean, I can stand on a street corner and hold a sign that says, I hate, you know, insert adjective here. But you are not free to allow that bias or hatred to motivate you to commit a crime. And that's what we're addressing here is the motivation and the action of the crime and just trying to address the bias intent behind it. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled very clearly on this in 1993 in a case called Wisconsin v. Mitchell, where the unanimous Rehnquist court said that there was absolutely no cooling of free speech or no legislating of thought process, that the Wisconsin statute, which we've tried to model our legislation around, was entirely constitutional.
So go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I want to also – I think it's important as we embark further on this conversation to talk for me to just put on my lawyer hat for a second and talk a little bit about the different kinds of bias crimes laws mm-hmm. that exist. I'm going to talk very loosely about sort of three categories. There's one, and it's never really been seriously discussed in the last decade or so here in Indiana, that would create an entirely separate new crime. And that's one that even some people who support what Indiana has done, people like Brian Bosma perhaps, who said he's supportive recently of a mm-hmm. of a hate crimes law, has said he's not in favor of, which is an entirely separate new crime solely based on that idea of policing thought or whatever or motivation. That hasn't really been offered very much. It hasn't been seriously discussed here in Indiana. So the two that have been seriously discussed are what has moved at all, which is merely an aggravator to the current sentence range. So a level 5 felony, for instance, is anywhere from 1 to 6 years. And a judge looks at a bunch of the circumstances in the case and says it should be 6 or closer to that or 1 or closer to that. This would just say it's one of the things that will maybe lean toward that 6 years. That's the lowest level of what you could do, and that's the only thing that's really moved. Then there's an actual enhancement that would say, okay, you've committed a level 5 felony, but you did it because the victim was Christian or black. Well, we're going to make that a level 4. We're going to give you more time than you otherwise would have gotten. And that's a more significant step that has had some discussion here, but hasn't really advanced in any significant way in the General Assembly in the last several years.
David, you look like you want to say something here.
No, I think Brandon's exactly right. You know, Senator Taylor can speak to his bill, which has, you know, focused on the potential enhancement. We have had plenty of conversation about both enhancements and aggravators. And I know that the coalition of organizations that I work with, you know, not just JCRC, but organizations across the board who are supporting this are supportive of either one of those concepts. You know, at the end of the day, we will support what we think can be successful. And we think both of those ideas are a good, strong, positive step forward for the state.
Senator Taylor, I think he gave you a cue there.
Yes, I think I'm just going to be, devil's advocate here. I don't think at this point I haven't seen enough movement to make either one of them plausible either in the Senate or the House this year. So I have to be cautiously optimistic on whether or not we're going to even see anything come across the board that is going to move Indiana into the 21st century. So I have yet to see anything that anyone has filed that is going to see an overwhelming amount of support. My bill is an enhancement. I will keep it as an enhancement. It adds 3 years, allows a judge to add 3 years on a misdemeanor and 5 years on any felony.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation here on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor, he's a Democrat from Indianapolis, David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council, and Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881, send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org, or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation today on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor, a Democrat from Indianapolis, David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith, and we've just been joined by Indiana Representative Greg Porter, a Democrat also from Indianapolis. Welcome to the program, Representative Porter.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. It's good to have you here. And I'm going to do the same disclaimer I did at the top of the show, which is we did invite people who have, at least historically, have expressed opposition to the idea of hate crimes legislation. Some had conflicts. Others did not even respond to the invitation. But the fact that there seem to be more voices on one side of the discussion today than the other is not from lack of trying on our part. So we want to let you know that. If you do want to join the conversation, you can do it by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Janet has done and reach out to us via Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Janet writes, does the legislation have a better chance of passing with Governor Holcomb's support? And does it stand a better chance now that David Long is gone from the Senate? Okay, I think that one's teed up more for the senator than anyone else. But I am going to ask Representative Porter about the chances in the House as well.
Yes, I think that everything that we've seen that's happened over the last year, I think that there's been some positive momentum. But I would caution everyone to be optimistic about movement in the Senate. Recognize the individual who is now leading the Senate, Roderick Bray, when his father was the head of the Judiciary Committee, he denied or would not hear this bill. So I don't know if that's going to be the same attitude that the Senate takes this year. But again, as I stated earlier, I'm cautiously optimistic about the opportunities. I'll let Representative Porter talk about the House of Representatives and what he thinks.
Representative Porter.
You know, this is November. We go all the way till the end of April. That's eternity. And I'm optimistic. However, you know, until we Saudi die and I know it's gone, you know, I'm gonna be very cautious about it. Look, I mean, yes, the governor is part of his agenda. So he's had agendas before that weren't passed. So just because it's part of his agenda doesn't mean necessarily it's going to get a full, argument or full conversation and move forward. In the House side, people don't realize we've been working on this, particularly as a Black Caucus, since 1999. You know, that's a long time. 2003, we got a little bit passed, and I think Senator Taylor talked about the reporting aspect of it. But I guess the bottom line, back to your original question, can it pass? Can it move forward? 6 months out, of course we're all gonna say yes. in the last 2 weeks, we've seen a lot of things change. Okay, a lot of things change. So when you come back and think about 6 months from now or whatever, you know, it could. But you know what? If it doesn't, it won't be a shocker.
Yeah, Brandon, it's always amazing how things change in the legislature once the sleep deprivation really kicks in.
So there's a lot of different things at play here. The governor not only saying he'll support it, which is what he said earlier this summer, but mm-hmm. now having said recently that it will be part of his agenda, that's significant. That is significant.
It is.
Having that kind of weight behind it is better than it has been in the past, certainly in the last few years. But Representative Porter is also correct in that, particularly the sort of more controversial or difficult things that Eric Holcomb has put on his agenda in his time as governor haven't really gone very far a lot of times. So you have to put a note of caution with that. I would say having David Long no longer the Senate president may actually hurt.
Exactly.
Because David Long at the end or last session when the hate crimes bill wasn't – they announced that it wasn't going to move out of committee at all or even come up for a vote in committee – David Long said, I am going to make sure that this issue gets revisited next year. Well, David Long is gone, and we don't know what Rod Bray thinks about it, as Senator Taylor alluded to. We know what his father thought about it. I will say one thing that might help a little bit is that Senator Mike Delf is no longer a member of the Indiana Senate, and he was one of the loudest voices. He was one of the loudest voices arguing against a hate crimes law, as well as a member of the committee that considered it. So that's impactful. But the sort of folks outside, many of whom were invited to be on the show and for one mm-hmm. reason or another are not, they still hold a lot of sway in the General Assembly. And particularly when it comes to the House, we have no idea what a vote looks like in the House because we haven't had one. We've seen what it looks like. It's gotten out of the Senate. A few years ago, it got out of the Senate and then died in the House without a hearing. So we have no sense, I think, of what a vote like that looks like in the House, despite the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, Speaker Brian Bosma has said in the last couple of years that he thinks it's time for a hate crimes law. The question will be, if it makes it to the House, how much muscle is Brian Bosma willing to put behind it, if at all?
David, why is it so difficult to get people who oppose hate crimes legislation to come out in the open? I mean, and I'm drawn again on my experience when I was at the ACLU with a lot of this stuff. They don't want to engage in a public debate over it. It's always behind closed doors or out in the halls.
Sure. Well, before I get to that, let me add just real quickly to the likelihood conversation. And, you know, as an advocate, I think it's my job to be a little bit more hopeful than some of the legislators. And, you know,
you don't want to tell people, oh, yes, you're wasting
right,
your time.
That's right. 4 years of my life, you know, on this. Let me tell you why I am a little bit more hopeful, though, this year. Unfortunately, we have had a lot of things happen over the last year. You know, FBI statistics are out this morning that show a 17% jump in hate crimes across the country, across all different characteristics. I think it has opened folks' eyes to the fact that these types of things are happening. They're continuing to happen, and they're getting worse. Particularly the vandalism that we saw at the synagogue in central Indiana when the governor took his position, I think opened a lot of folks' eyes here in Indiana. And we're having just excellent conversations with the governor's office, with legislative leaders on both sides of the aisle in all caucuses. We have more and more legislators coming out, you know, and engaging with us every day. And I'm also, you know, particularly encouraged by the group of advocates that are coming together on this issue. It is a truly unified front of faith organizations, civic organizations, the business community, anybody that you can think of who wants to take Indiana a step in the right direction is supporting this effort. So I am, you know, cautiously optimistic this year. As far as why it's difficult for folks to come out, I mean, look, this is sort of it's a political issue. It's a philosophical and ideological issue for a lot of people, and it plays into, you know, local politics. And, you know, we have a lot of legislators who either maybe with us, you know, again, behind closed doors, but they hear a lot from their constituents, again, kind of centering on these myths and misconceptions about what the law can do and why they don't, you know, want to see it enacted. We hear a lot of folks that just don't think these types of things are an issue in their districts. And so I think for a lot of those reasons, you know, folks want to have these conversations behind closed doors, but are not necessarily interested in having them again out in the open. But again, I really do feel like that's changing this year quite a bit. And I'm expecting a more robust conversation this year.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Brett has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Brett, you're on the air.
I think I agree with everyone most likely that we definitely need to have a hate crimes bill in Indiana. We're always behind the rest of the nation, it seems. My concern, I work with a lot of law enforcement agencies around the state and the Midwest, and putting the additional burden of, at the time of arrest, having to list whether or not an officer believes it is a hate crime, I think is one of the big problems that is going to prevent this from ever happening. If this is presented as a tool for the prosecution at the time of sentencing, I think we're going to have a better chance of that going through, because I'm not an attorney, but I don't feel that motive is a reason of guilt or not. So whether or not I committed the crime, I'm guilty or innocent, it should be after that is declared whether or not the prosecution seeks, okay, what was the motive behind that? Is that going to affect sentencing? Okay. And if this was presented by the Prosecuting Attorneys Association and requesting this as, hey, this is an additional tool that we need, I think you'd get a lot more support and maybe have a chance of going through.
Thanks for the call, Brett. Everybody on the panel is leaning forward and wants a piece of that. So thanks very much for calling and raising the point. David, I'll start with you.
So I appreciate the question. So first of all, IPAC actually is supportive. We've had the support of IPAC, the Prosecuting Attorneys Council, for the last 4 or 5 years on this issue. So so they have taken a position statewide in favor of the statute. So the issue there that Brett touches on, I think, is a good one. And I think it speaks to why we need that law enforcement education so we can help them do a little bit better job of understanding how to recognize these types of things to happen, how to gather that evidence and how to react to them, because it's not ultimately the police officers or the law enforcement officials who are going to make that determination on whether to utilize this statute. It will be the prosecutors that ultimately decide to make that case for an enhancement or for an aggravating circumstance. So the value of the law enforcement officer in this equation is to understand how to gather that evidence when the crime happens, to be able to present that information to the prosecutor and ultimately the prosecutor to make the case that there was a biased motivation, and then the judge to, you know, either agree or disagree and ultimately enhance or aggravate that sentence.
Representative Porter and then Senator Taylor.
Well, yes, and I appreciate Brett and his comments. And as David said, we do have the association behind us. There's I think about 30 or 40 organizations that support this legislation. You know, I think it was House Bill 1011 back in 2003 that really initiated some of the education and training part of it that I authored, and that was part of it. And even talking to the state police 2 years ago, they wanted more training for the officers here in the state as they try to report this. So I mean, as we continue this dialogue, I heard Senator Taylor earlier talk about, you know, was it 2 weeks or 4 weeks or in the police academy. I mean, you know, it is about education. It is about understanding what you can report or what you can. It's not is what you can gather to help with the evidence of a bias crime or hate crime legislation, and then give it to the prosecutor or the prosecutors or the judge and say, this is the evidence, do what you do, and the jury or whoever.
Senator Taylor.
Here we go again. I think the question is kind of loaded, and I think it's just actual common sense. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you spray paint a swastika on a synagogue that it's against the synagogue. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to find a burning cross in a family's front yard and they happen to be the only black family in the front in the neighborhood. Those are the types of things that we're seeing in Indiana. It doesn't take a lot of law enforcement training to see a cross burning. Those are things that we expect law enforcement to see. We expect law enforcement to investigate these things. And let me say this. There are enhancements all across the board for crimes. For example, if you're within 500 feet of a school, if you attack someone who's a child. And remember, when it comes to child and elderly, it's absolute. It doesn't mean you knew or should have known. It's that they are. We have all kinds of laws that require law enforcement to look for those enhancements. And here's the nail that puts the nail in the coffin for me. 98% of the cases that are brought in the criminal justice system in the state of Indiana never see a courtroom. So proving this is not as important as you think. It is used as a way to get people to settle, to get people to actually plead to a lower or lesser violation and get extra time. That's what happens in the court system. We need to look at reality, and the reality is it's not too hard to figure out that these things are biased against a certain group.
We've got a message from a listener named Greg on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Greg writes, "I'm tired of talk about Indiana being behind on stuff. That is an attempt to play up on low geopolitical self-esteem. Who gets sucked into that approach? Anyone? In the Indiana of hate crimes, we can get far ahead with something that perhaps all can get behind. That is the widespread implementation of effective methods to prevent and cease hatred." You know, realistically,
Indiana's going to solve hatred.
Well, and I don't want to demean Greg for raising the point, because obviously I think everyone on the panel would argue that's a worthy goal. But some of this, and most law is there when you know, it's been demonstrated people can't get along, right?
Yeah, you're talking about a systematic change. And in order to change the system, we've got to go look at other parts of the public policy spectrum, education, what we do to make people coexist with each other. And what he's talking about is taking those systematic changes into place. And I think that's what we all should strive for. But right now, the only thing we can deal with is the symptoms of it. And we have, as in Indiana, we have been so far behind the rest of the country to address our issues of hatred and bigotry. And my fear, and it's like everybody else is experiencing these things, every time I hear of something that's happening around the rest of the country, the first thing that pops in my mind is, boy, that could definitely happen in Indiana.
But we have an opportunity here, and I appreciate Greg's question. You know, the simple fact is we would argue that we are one of five states without a statute. So that's just simple.
That's a fact.
That's a fact. You know, so there's nothing that we can do about that. But what it does provide us, I think, is an opportunity. One, you know, I think it should help us in the conversation, because most of these states have enacted their statutes, again, 10, 15 years ago. So, you know, I would understand a lot of opposition if we were at the tip of the spear of trying to enact this legislation across the country. But it's been largely settled across the country, the effectiveness of these statutes. But the opportunity that I think it provides us is, you know, in a case that we're going to try to make to legislators, is that we can look at what every other state has done, and we can create the best definition of what a state statute or what a biased crime is across the country. We have that opportunity now as a state to be, you know, to come from behind and be at the forefront.
We are talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation today on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor. He's a Democrat from Indianapolis. Indiana Representative Greg Porter, also a Democrat from Indianapolis. David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council. And Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation today on No Limits. My guests are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor. He's a Democrat from Indianapolis. Indiana Representative Greg Porter, also a Democrat from Indianapolis. David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council, and Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Lance has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Lance, you're on the air.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. The first thing I'd like to address is that why people don't speak out for, you know, or against these is because you're portrayed as a racist or some sort of, you know, troglodyte if you happen to be against these kind of laws. First of all, the gentleman that said they're not thought crime, that's exactly what it is. First of all, they're punishing people for what they think. If my neighbor on my left is a Caucasian fellow that I hate just because he and I have had some interactions, and my neighbor on the right is a guy that happens to be Hispanic or African-American, if I do some damage to one man's house because I hate him, and I do some damage to the other man's house because I hate him, you're going to punish me more for what I was thinking when I did it. One other thing I want to say is the thing about children and elderly, those are weak, weak people that need protection, extra protection in the law. People that are of different races and think different things than other people are still able-bodied people that don't need that protection or shouldn't. And finally, I'd like to say that race is imaginary. So if you're hurting somebody because of the race, you're a bad person. I agree. But when you hurt people for other reasons, you're just as bad.
Thanks very much for the call and for raising the points. That's the other frequent argument here is that that in effect, by saying we're going to enhance the penalty for mugging someone or beating them up because of race or religion or sexual orientation or any of these categories, you're saying that there's, you know, that it's more acceptable to do it for one reason than another. Brandon, I'll let you weigh in.
Let me just offer this hypothetical. Let's say I were to go out and spray paint the side of WFYI with, you know, a picture of Donald Duck. Now, that's vandalism. Mm-hmm. I would be prosecuted for that if I were caught. Let's say I were to go to a synagogue and spray paint a swastika. Same crime under our current system. Mm-hmm. Are they the same crime? No. Mm-hmm. And I don't think most people think they should be treated the same. But in order to treat the person who graffitis a swastika on a synagogue, in order to punish them to the level that I think a lot of people would feel is appropriate, you are going to punish them for what they were thinking and trying to accomplish by doing what they did. So, yeah, some crimes are different. And some of that different lies in what the motivation for that crime was.
And this argument about whether or not you somehow, because your neighbor on the left is Caucasian and your neighbor on the right is Hispanic, it's race, people. Everybody, if you do it because you don't appreciate someone's race, it's going to be the same penalty. So what I hate to hear in these discussions is people talking about discriminating against someone who's of the minority persuasion. It could happen just as much as someone who's of the majority. But here's the issue. The fact that we're sitting here having this argument and people think this is to protect the minorities shows you that over time the system has created this imbalance, because proportionately you know in your heart of hearts that this happens to people of color. Now, when we put together the whole fight against child trafficking, and I use this as an example because we didn't think we had a problem. But when we figured out we had a problem, we addressed the issue. We have a problem in this country with people being able to interact with people because they are of a different hue. And I mean that. And if we don't address that issue, it's going to get worse and worse. I don't want to be reactive on this issue. I don't think that Indiana wants to be reactive. And we need to be realistic about where we are in this country and where we are in this state and address the issue. If we don't, we're going to deal with something extreme, and then out of those extreme situations, it's going to be an extreme measure.
Let me just set a couple of ground rules here. I have got a full phone bank of people calling in here. So I'm going to ask both callers and panelists to try to be as tight in their expressions as they can.
Really quickly, to the caller's hypothetical, that there's a man who lives on his right who's white and a man who lives on his left is Hispanic. If he attacks one, then he gets a harsher penalty. That's not true. That's not true.
No, it isn't.
They would have to prove that the reason he attacked that person was because of their race.
That's right.
So if he's saying that that's not why he attacked them and you couldn't prove it, then he wouldn't be charged a harsher penalty. That's simply not how these laws work.
We're talking about hate crimes legislation and hate crimes here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Joe has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, what's on your mind?
Yeah, two things to say. I'm all for it, but it's not broad enough. It should be more simplified, generalized, where it's against what you are and what you do, particularly in a political or what you do for a living situation. That broadens it out, And number two, I would say that I wouldn't want to give the judge the discretion. I wouldn't want to put that as a separate issue to the jury. It's the facts of the case. You know, let him rule on the primary crime that happened, and then put that as a second issue to a jury in a trial. If there's enough evidence to beyond a reasonable doubt to go for the enhancement, I think that'd get a lot more traction. And particularly with the political views and what you do for a living, you broaden it out. What you are, what you do. I think that's what the whole thing's about. Except with the exception that what you do shouldn't be a criminal thing. If you're part of a gang or drug dealers, if you've got somebody committing a crime against another gang member, that's a criminal enterprise and should not be part of the enhancement. But otherwise, it should be broadened out where it's something you are, which is, your gender, your race, whatever, or what you do for a living, or your political actions and beliefs too. Somebody beats up a guy with a MAGA hat on, or somebody beats up a guy in a Black Lives Matter, that's a reasonable enhancement, in my opinion. So I don't think it's broad enough. I don't think it's fair enough. What do you guys think?
Thanks very much for the call, David.
So this is actually a conversation that we've had quite a bit over the last couple of years, and I would fully expect us to continue to have this year of, sort of who is covered under the legislation and whether we should include some things like political affiliation or whether you're a law enforcement officer or things like that. And that's a discussion that we're going to continue to have. So the original point of the legislation from our perspective as advocates is what we're trying to focus on are things that are immutable, these concept of immutable characteristics. So race, national origin, gender, things that are inherent to who we are. So, obviously if Senator Taylor or Representative Porter walk out of their house people are going to know that they're black, right? These are the things that are immutable about us, and there is a strong, compelling government interest to protect because we know that these are often the focus of discriminatory actions. The courts themselves have ruled sort of consistently that they want these types of anti-discrimination statutes to be constrained, to focus on for lack of a better term, a list of specific things that the government has an interest to protect. As far as judge or jury, I think that is a good conversation, and that's a piece of the conversation that plays into whether we have an aggravator or an enhancement. An aggravator would just allow the judge to make that determine. An enhancement would likely have to go to a jury for that determination. So I think that's an interesting question and topic, and one that, again, will be addressed during the session this year.
Got a question from a listener named Gabriel via Facebook that takes this in a new area. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Gabriel writes, what is the economic impact of not having this legislation? Are there concerns that not having hate crimes protection but having RFRA protection makes Indiana harder to market to West Coast liberal companies that are looking to bring jobs to the state. And puts in parentheses Amazon, as if people wouldn't have figured that out all by themselves. All right, Representative Porter.
It does. It does not having this. I mean, I was on the phone with someone from New York today, and I said I was going to be on the show, and they were totally taken back and said, what? And they said, well, that's the reason why we got Amazon, huh? I mean, that's the first thing that came out of their mouth. It was an assemblyman out of New York. I think it does have an impact on us. I mean, the chamber understands. That's the reason why they're standing with the coalition now to address this issue. When RFRA hit, everyone said we're open to all. I mean, all the stores came out and had their own sayings. And so it does affect us. It really does. So for someone who doesn't think so, well, they're living in their own bubble of the world, and it does hurt us. And even though they said we're doing great, we can do better. And we can do better by the human infrastructure that we have and protecting the human infrastructure we have to generate more human capital for our state and our city.
We're talking about hate crimes here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do it. Listener named Wes is done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Wes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I really don't like the even idea of a hate law crime because it gives people more rights than others. I believe, you know, just giving the judges more control over the sentences, be it lighter or heavier, that's what it needs to be fair. That's all I've got to say.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Senator Taylor.
Well, judges already have that ability right now. We do in sentencing, we make the sentence ranges, and then we do what we call give the judge an advisory sentence range. And what the judges do is they start from that advisory, usually somewhere between 50% to 65% of the penalty time, the maximum. And then the judge either aggravates or mitigates the sentence based on what the particulars of the case are. So unfortunately for the caller, that's what we already do right now, and judges have that discretion right now in current law.
We've gotten a question from a listener via Twitter, and again, if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. This listener says, is intent not already built into the law, murder versus manslaughter? Does the earlier caller understand this? Creating hate crimes legislation allows for the distinction between a crime against an individual versus a crime against a race, religion, sexuality, etc. Okay. Senator Taylor made the argument for me.
Yeah, I was just going to say these are not individual crimes. These are crimes against a group.
Right.
When you do something like this, that's been done, the spray painting of the synagogue in Carmel. You didn't just spray paint a outbuilding on a church. You affected a whole group of people. Bringing up that ugly symbol and bringing it up on a Jewish synagogue, man, has far-reaching ramifications on the entire group of people who worship there.
So, and I just want to jump in super quick and just, you know, caution us. We talk a lot about groups sometimes, and you know, I think this speaks to Wes's question. It's not about protecting specific groups. It's about identifying specific characteristics. So every one of us sitting here around this table and everybody listening has a characteristic that falls into each one of these categories. Everybody has a race. Everybody has a religion or non-religion. Everybody has a national origin. Everybody has a gender. So it's not a zero-sum game. It's not that we are only providing special protection for certain groups.
We're going to go to a Facebook question then from a listener named Brian. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Brian writes, one of the commentators said that Indiana is one of five states that does not have specific discrimination laws. How effective have these laws been in other states? What state has seen the largest drop in hate crimes after putting hate crimes in place? Anyone there?
I'm not sure that there's real good data on the prevention of bias crimes by state. So it's a little hard to answer that question.
I don't think this is necessarily a preventative measure. I don't think a lot of the people who are arguing for it are saying, well, we won't have hate crimes anymore if we have a hate crimes law.
We're talking about hate crimes and hate crimes legislation here on No Limits. Chuck, you're on the air.
Hi, John. I wanted to address the gentleman who called earlier, and he made a case where if someone spray painted Donald Duck on their neighbor's house, how that would be different from spray painting a swastika on their house. However, if I were Jewish and I woke up to Donald Duck on the side of my house, I would paint it over, scrub it off, or pay someone to repair it. If I'm Jewish and I wake up to a swastika, it goes beyond the physical damage of the property. And I wake up then in fear forever after that. And I think that lies the difference in hate crimes is a crime against someone for being something that they have the right to be and cannot help but to be anything else. Whether you're black or Jewish or gay or no matter what, you have no choice in being who you are. And our Constitution gives us the right to be that.
Chuck, I'm going to have to jump in because we're getting close on time here, and I want to give I think you're referencing Brandon. I'm going to give him the last word today.
Yeah, I mean, that was the comparison I made, and he just made the point that I was making, which is those two things, while treated under the law the same, are not.
So let me say this: we're in our last few seconds of the program here. And I've got a long list of Facebook comments and more phone calls waiting and all of that. I was going to ask if the four of you would consider continuing the conversation on our Facebook page and
Absolutely.
Taking part and responding. And I'll ask our listeners to carry it over there. I want to thank my guests for what has been a really, really lively conversation. They are Indiana Senator Greg Taylor, a Democrat from Indianapolis, Indiana Representative Greg Porter, he's also a Democrat from Indianapolis, David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council, and Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Thank you all. It's been lively.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to thank our listeners, as always, for some great questions and comments. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.